The Q, the O, and the Dub. Welcome to Junior, the CHL podcast with Jeff Merrick and Sam Cosentino. From now until the MasterCard Memorial Cup, this is the destination for news, opinion, and prospects. No one does the CHL like this.
Well, Sam Cosentino, here we are once again. It is Wednesday. That means another edition of Junior. How are you today, Sam?
Yeah, doing great, Jeff. Nice to be back on the airwaves, or the podcast waves, I guess, if you will. But
yes,
yeah, we're getting near crunch time here in the CHL. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, we are. It's you can almost feel it with playoffs on the horizon for all three loops. Things are packed in that QMJHL around the bottom. You were just mentioning off the air a little bit too. Interesting to see how the wild cards are going to fall in the Western Hockey League, and the OHL is always an interesting affair as well. But let's begin today's podcast, Sam, by talking about one of the big announcements this week. Became official early on this week. Vancouver and Pacific Coliseum will host the 2016 BMO CHL NHL Top Prospects Game. And this will be headlined, of course, by players like Jacob Chychrun, Tyler Benson, Sam Steele, Julian Gauthier, and should he decide to go the Everett versus the NCAA routes, Austin Matthews as well. Your thoughts on Vancouver getting the game next year?
Well, I always love it when the game is picked in a place where they have a top guy. I mean, I think about Halifax a couple of years ago when McKinnon and Drouin were there. You look at Niagara this year, maybe not the high IN guys with Vince Dunn and Graham not involved, but it's very important for me just for the local draw sort of things. But the 2015 game, no question, was going to be a big draw just because McDavid was involved, and you could have put that in Timbuktu and a million people would have shown up. No question there, you know. But, Jeff, looking towards next year, I mean, you know, what's pretty cool is the guy you mentioned right off the top, Chychrun, I think is going to be a dynamite player. Austin Matthews, if he decides to come. And I can't say his name well yet, but I'm going to start to learn it out of the Finnish league there. Puljujarvi, I think, is how you might go about saying it, but we'll have to learn about that one for sure. You know, Sam Steele, Logan Brown, Jake Bean is going to be a really interesting character next year. Matthew Tkachuk, there's going to be plenty of guys that are going to be participating in this game from all over the place. And, you know, every year it's hard not to think ahead to the next year's draft. I think we're stuck kind of in quicksand right now because of the Connor McDavid thing. But once we get past, you know, Florida, it's going to be pretty cool to start looking ahead to the 2016 guys and see who ends up where in the CHL that we know are going to end up participating in the game.
Yeah, you know, I want to pause on Chychrun as well for a couple of seconds here, Sam, because conversations that I have about players and about prospects, the name that people keep coming back to for next season, other teams that are involved in the lottery this time around, keep coming back to Jacob Chychrun. And I've been asked a number of different times, how good is this guy? What's the skill sets? And the first thing that I always notice when I see Jacob Chychrun is, I don't believe the birth certificate. Like, I look at this kid and say, he looks like physically looks like he's 25 years old. And then you watch him play and you say to yourself, this guy looks like he's playing like someone who's just in advanced years as well. When you see Chychrun play for the Sarnias thing, what pops into your mind right away?
Let me throw this at you, Jeff. How about the presumed 2015 NHL Rookie of the Year, Aaron Ekblad? That's the guy who comes to mind for me right away. Because if you go back to last year's draft, okay, and you know, we'd seen so much of Aaron Ekblad because he was granted exceptional status, and throughout the course of the year, he climbed. Then, of course, he ends up going number one to Florida. Chychrun is that guy for me, going to the 2016 draft, that I think is going to have that rise to prominence. And again, a lot of it has to do with position. You know, it's one thing to be able to get a franchise-changing forward, and we're going to see it with McDavid, we're going to see it with Eichel here coming up this year. But to get a franchise-changing defenseman, and if you ask Dale Tallon right now, it's obviously very early, but I'd say the early returns on Aaron Ekblad are that he's a franchise-changing defenseman. I feel the same way about Jacob Chychrun. And those guys are harder to find. You know that, Jeff. Defensemen that can impact the franchise are harder to find than forwards who can do that. And so he's a guy, when I look at him right now, yeah, he's sitting in probably the top five spot. But by the time we get to next June, he's a guy who I think might end up being the Aaron Ekblad of the 2016 draft.
Which is why, and I'm with you, Sam, I sort of have a positional bias, and I defer to defensemen before I defer to forwards, which is when I go back to the Steven Stamkos draft, right? Steven Stamkos, Sarnia Sting, Drew Doughty, Guelph, Storm. If that draft was redone, I'm not sure that I still have Stamkos, knowing what we know now and what the players they developed into. And of course, Stamkos is one of the most elite, you know, elite scorers and best players in the entire game. But I don't know that I don't draft Drew Doughty first overall, because to your point, it is so hard to find a franchise changing defenseman as opposed to finding the franchise changing forward.
I think it speaks to just how much you value the position. I mean, you're talking about a perennial 50-goal guy, and Stamkos is just dynamite. He's a wonderful person, you know, community, all that sort of stuff. But I don't know how many arguments you'd get. I mean, geez, Drew Doughty, what more can a guy do in the course of his short career to this point than what you've seen from him? And so L.A. obviously made a very good pick at that time, helped turn their franchise around. I mean, it's turned them into two-time Stanley Cup champions. And as you mentioned, those guys don't come along at the defense position very often. So I think you make a wonderful case there.
Let me get your thoughts on a couple of players that we'll see next year, and you mentioned a couple of them. Sam Steele, Regina Pats, and Tyler Benson of the Vancouver Giants. We'll see Vancouver, by the way, Friday on Friday Night Hockey as they face off against the Kelowna Rockets. Your thoughts on these two players?
Well, Benson, for me, is a guy that I thought was going to come into the league this year as an underage guy and really light things up. Now, he hasn't had a great team around him in Vancouver, but by all accounts, everyone you talk to, he is going to be that guy. And I think this summer is going to be huge for him going into next year. That at some points, Jeff, you can't deny and you can't turn a blind eye to the numbers. At some point, you have to look at the numbers and say, you know what? There is some credence to this. And so numbers this year, not awesome, not horrible, but not off the charts for Benson. So that's the first thing for me. I'm going to look for some of that, him having a strong summer and coming back and being at least a point per game guy next year for Vancouver. Sam Steele, I mean, everyone's talked about this guy as just being an offensive dynamo for the Regina Pats. And when you look at the Pats having traded away three veteran players this year and still able to perform well enough to be a playoff contender and a playoff threat, that says a lot to me about Sam Steele and what he's done here in his underage year. So the guy that I'm really going to be looking forward to watching is Jake Bean, because he might be the next coming of Travis Sanheim. I think we're seeing it this year with Thomas Chabot. We saw it last year with Sanheim in the 2014 draft going to Philly. But Jake Bean is a guy that looks like he's on that path to being the Travis Sanheim of the 2016 draft.
And when you look at him and he's on that, you know, that stacked Calgary Hitmen team, in his first year playing junior, he's around 40 points in 50 games. So already making an impact on a very highly dynamic Calgary Hitmen squad. Julian Gauthier was someone who I had my eyes opened up to, and a lot of people did last year at the MasterCard Memorial Cup in London. Next year will be a debutante's ball or a coming out party for Julian Gauthier of Val d'Or.
Part of it is this year. Next year has to be a continuation of that. There's no doubt in my mind, because when you look at the size and strength, he has that kind of like Chychrun, where you look at him and shake his hand and you look at him in street clothes and say, this guy's a man already. But I think what has to come a little bit in his game, it's the puck sense. Shooting ability, not a problem. Hands pretty good. It could probably use some improvement in that area. But for me, it's all about the puck sense and the hockey IQ. And that's a tough thing to improve as a young guy. And so either one of two things happens. That area develops for you because you get older, more mature, and you see the game and you slow the game down. Or you become a guy who plays with the skill set and the hockey sense he has, and you become more of a straight line, simple type of guy, which if that were the case would make him a true power forward as opposed to a skilled power forward. So you're right, it'll be fun to watch Gauthier, and it's going to be fun to watch him in the playoffs this year. I mean, Val-d'Or's on an unbelievable run now. They've put themselves in the top, I don't know, five or six teams in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League right now, and Gauthier's obviously played a part in that.
Yeah, on a little two-game slide right now, but 8-2 in their past 10, and it wasn't that long ago they were ripping off a winning streak, I guess the likes of which we're watching Shawinigan go through right now, who are a fun team to watch, and are jumping up in the standings right now in at number 5. Should the playoffs start today. Quick little nod to the CIS final. A great moment. Brad Fay, who hosted all weekend long and did a great job on Sportsnet, hosting a lot of our coverage, he hadn't seen the Tyler Carroll shot block shift when he played with the Guelph Storm against the Kitchener Rangers. And so, of course, he's playing for UNB, and I'm like, Fazer, you got to see this shift. And so I showed him the shift. You can find it on YouTube if you haven't already watched it. It's one of the great shot-blocking shifts of all time, to the point where Tyler Carroll, playing with the Guelph Storm in Kitchener, gets a standing ovation from the opposition crowd after absorbing three punishing shots to the ankle and barely able to stand. A great moment in junior hockey. But your thoughts and, I guess, congratulations to the Golden Bears taking care of UNB.
Yeah, it's, perennial powers, UNB and University of Alberta. I guess the one disappointment for me is not being able to go out there and call it this year. I think I've done seven or eight of them in the past, and it's really, really a marvelous event. They went with a new format this year, a top eight in a one-game playdowns and showdowns with the teams seeded 1 through 8, and, you know, there was obviously a one and done and go home. So that format, just being there and being able to feel it would have been pretty neat, but I'll probably debrief with Falsey over the course of the weekend just to see how that went. That would be my one disappointment, is just not being able to. And the hotel we were in Sherbrooke, we didn't get to see it either, so that kind of sucked. But it's an awesome event. It's the most underrated hockey in our country. And Amen. If you don't believe it, just give yourself the opportunity to go out there and watch a game sometime. I mean, these guys play hard. They're mature from their CHL days. They're smarter, older, more mature. I mean, it's truly, truly an awesome event that our country, I hope our company continues to give it the props it deserves.
Yeah, amen to that, Sam. And, you know, I went to university in the early 90s, and I went to Guelph, and there were, you know, a handful of players that played in the OHL that ended up playing university hockey. But now when you watch the game, it is littered with players that have taken the education package. And to your point earlier, it is the best-kept secret as far as hockey goes in the country, because the play is elite, and you'll recognize a lot of it. It's not just, you know, the Tyler Carroll and David Chance, chances of the world that are playing CAS hockey, but it is littered with literally CHL players just on just about every team.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's huge, huge representation. And I think last year when we did it, the numbers were up around 80%. And so, you know, for the naysayers and the people that talk about minimum wage, amateur athlete versus being paid pro, when the CHL thing and the lawsuit and all that kind of stuff, pay attention to that event. Pay attention to the schools that are playing down to get into that event when it comes to the C-West finals and the C-West playoffs and AUS and the OUAA East and West. I mean, pay attention to that and just see how many guys are taking advantage of the scholarship program and see whether or not it's worthwhile. And go back and do your numbers and see how much those scholarships end up being valued at when a guy completes 4 or 5 years. I mean, there's a lot of money involved there. It's not the dollars and cents that you'd put in your pocket. But I think a lot of parents, I think players who, after a year or two of being exposed to it, realize just how important the scholarship program is as a result of that.
100%. And, you know, I can tell you, I work out at a gym where there's a lot of kids that play in the Ontario Hockey League that are there. And I talked to one last summer who was offered an AHL, ECHL deal from an NHL team. And he turned it down, saying, listen, my education package that I'm getting from the CHL is just worth more. And I have a better chance long term success wise taking my CHL package as opposed to taking an AHL, ECHL deal and maybe trying to bang it out from there. I'm just going to go with this guarantee because it's a great package. And to your point about, you know, the numbers that are being paid out as well, I talked to an OHL coach last week who said, listen, we're paying out within 3 years, we've doubled the packages we're paying right now. Like that's how much money is actually going out of the CHL to the education packages. And even Sam, as a parent, right, I'm a parent of two kids. I have one kid who's turning 5 in June, and my other just turned 3. If you asked me as a parent, what would I rather have if my kids made it to Canadian Major Junior Hockey? Would I rather they be given minimum wage for playing, or would I rather see their education taken care of and paid for? And I'll tell you, as a parent, Sam, I'll take the education over minimum wage any day of the week. I would argue most parents would feel the same way.
Yeah, the cost of it. I mean, it can end up financially ruining some parents, at least for the short term. And you're looking at parents, at least I know in my case, that I'll be at retirement age by the time my kids end up going to university. And so, you know, do I want to take that out of my RSPs or Canada Pension or whatever it is? I mean, that would be a very difficult challenge indeed. So I think that you got to take a good, strong look at it. I mean, the 18 months, I know some agents have come out recently and talked about that's not a long enough period of time. But by the same token, hey, listen, pooper, get off the pot here. Are you going to go and just kind of toil and fool around playing minor pro hockey, or are you going to go to school? Because I thought what was really important in some of the things that I've been hearing is the longer it goes, the less likely a student is to go back to school.
Going to go back.
So if you give him 2 and 3 years with that package, is he really going to go back after 3 years? I don't know, because you kind of assimilated yourself into adult life at that point as a pro hockey player, be it in the coast or wherever else. I think a year and a half is enough time to figure things out as to whether or not you're going to make it as a pro. And I understand and I respect that there's late bloomers, but no rule, no law is ever made to protect or to apply to 100% of the people 100% of the time. That's just the fact.
And on that, we'll take a break. Thanks for joining us on Junior. We're coming back to talk to the president of the CHL, also doubles as the commissioner of the Ontario Hockey League. Dave Branch joins Junior in moments.
Hi, I'm Derek Roy. I play for the Edmonton Oilers, and I played for the Kitchener Rangers in the OHL.
Welcome back to the podcast. Jeff Merrick alongside Sam Cosentino. Joining us now is someone who really does not need an introduction if you listen to this podcast, but he is, of course, the president of the CHL, the commissioner of the OHL, and right now at the OHL Cup. And don't forget, Sportsnet will air the final of this one on Sportsnet 1. He is David Branch, and he joins the Junior podcast now. David, first of all, good afternoon. And second of all, how are things going at the OHL Cup?
You know what? I love this tournament. It's evolved over the years. And first of all, it's a bit of a convention with all the hockey people.
Right.
From the OHL, yes, but also the NHL. It's amazing how this particular event has taken on a whole new level of interest. But more importantly, the players. I mean, I was talking to Peter DeBoer. He's here with his son, Jack, who's playing as an underage for the tournament. And we were just both marveling, and he knows a lot more about hockey than I, about today's kids and how good they are. And I mean, I just sat back and finished watching a game, and just incredible talent and well-coached, and it speaks well for our game going forward.
This is something that you've really kind of taken a shining to and really put a lot of resources into this over the last couple of years. How important is it, this event, in terms of, you know, players coming into the Ontario Hockey League and where they are in their development and how they can have an impact in their first year in moving to the Ontario Hockey League?
Yeah, you know what? That's a great question and comment, really, too, Sam, from the standpoint of the importance. And we now see where teams really look for the opportunity to come, hope to come. And then at the event, which is really led by Joe Birch of the Ontario Hockey League, and does a fabulous job with all our staff, it allows us to really put out there for the parents' benefit, for sure, and the players, you know, all the various programs that we have in place to support young people, not just as players, but, you know, in their formative years, developing, whether it's our drug education program, our mental health program, on and on and on. And I mean, that helps to educate parents so that they can make an informed decision, because it's a very difficult age group. I think, Sam, as you know, and Jeff, I mean, I coach at this age group generally. And I mean, I see it in the parents that I get involved with. They have so many questions. There's so many unknowns. And this is a great opportunity for them to get some good answers.
Are there a couple of performances, and maybe the answer is Tyler Seguin, or maybe the answer is Connor McDavid or Robbie Fabry? Are there a couple of performances by players in this tournament that stand out for you, Dave?
Oh, wow. Each and every year there seems to be, you know, a player that stands out. But it's interesting that you would name Robbie Fabry, because he is the one that flashes immediately to my attention when he was playing for the Mississauga Rebels, was it?
Yep, beat the Marlies in the final.
Beat them, like, 2-1.
Yep.
And I mean, you could just see where Robbie willed that team to win. And it was interesting, because during this year's World Junior Tournament, when he went down with the high ankle sprain, you know, not that they wanted to hear this, but, you know, I mentioned to Benoit Grue, I said, you know what, Ben, I hope that this injury doesn't come back and haunt you, because I've seen Robbie Fabry, and he's a big player game, as we saw in minor midget at the OHL Cup. I took him through that. And of course, last year, he was the playoff MVP, winning the 99 award for the OHL. So he's a big game player. And mm-hmm. I just, that's one that really resonates with me when you talk about singular performances. And another little story I like to tell is I brought Ron Robinson and Jill Corto to the OHL Cup 3 or 4 years ago. And we're sitting there watching it. And after about 5 minutes, Jill says to me, "You know, Dave, number 9 in the Marlboros, he's a pretty good player, eh?" And I said, "Yeah, his name's McDavid. You may hear from him going forward." So Jill actually takes credit for uncovering Connor McDavid.
Oh, that's outstanding. That's outstanding.
Yeah, but well, it's a fun time.
David, sure. I just want to move away from the OHL Cup a little bit, because we're moving into the Ontario Hockey League playoffs, and you know, every year there's some debate about what the playoff format should be and all that sort of stuff. But just looking at the way things are shaking down this year, still some things to be decided. Are you guys happy with your current playoff format, how things are going, and would you expect any changes in that regard in the near future?
We challenged ourselves actually a year ago to see if there was maybe another concept structure we should consider. And at the end of the day, it was felt that the way it's working right now is good. It really supports regional rivalries. It really, you know, lends to the importance of regular season play. I know that there's always talk that, hey, if you have two or three of the best teams in one conference, it may diminish, you know, the overall playoff final. But we've never really seen that, quite frankly. And I think this year is a good case in point where you can suggest that in the St. Marie Greyhounds and in the Erie Otters, you've got two great teams in the West. And I got to think that most people would agree that in the East, you know, you've got certainly Oshawa, and then you cannot take anything away from a Dale Hawachuk team in Barrie or a Stan Butler team in North Bay. So, I mean, I think right now it's, you know, status quo and moving forward. And at the end of the day, I think it's fair to suggest that this format generally produces the best team winning the OHL championship.
Any discussion, not at the OHL level, but at the CHL level, about making the playoff structure uniform? I mean, all three leagues have different formula. The Western Hockey League has now adopted the wild card format used by the NHL. The QMJHL still uses that old school 1-16, 2-15 that we haven't seen for quite some time at the pro level. But has there ever been any discussion about trying to make all three leagues uniform in their playoff structure?
No, you know what? Not really. I think, first of all, we recognize that, you know, given the fact that the three leagues are highly regionalized, for sure, in terms of how they are administered to and adjudicated, that each league has some, you know, unique circumstances and situations, and which cause for the way you conduct your affairs to be maybe unique to your league. And we respect that. We have a few rule variations as well. And but I think on playoff structure, we just allow each of the three leagues to do it the way they feel it best serves their needs and the nature and structure of the respective leagues.
But you touched on something there that hits a nerve with me on occasion, and you talked about some of the differences in terms of the rules. I mean, the icing is the first thing that comes to mind, but, you know, you also talk about checking to the head, those sort of things. That's the one thing that I really pull for, having uniformity across the CHL in all of the things, in all of the rules, and you know, the icing really is one that gets me. Can you maybe expand a little further on why that's not happening regionally, or is that something that that you guys continue to have discussions about?
Well, I mean, playing rules is one area, Sam, that we really do try and make uniform. I mean, but because of certain situations, once again, around views and attitudes, there are some variances. And quite frankly, we learn from each other. a particular league may put in a rule or a variation to a rule that we will all look at and consider. And you know what? Yeah, this makes a lot of sense. And then we'll adopt it. The one that really jumps out right now is the icing rule. And as a matter of fact, I was in Plymouth on Sunday past, and Igor Larionov, who had been in the Quebec League for a couple of games, said, asked me about the variance in the icing rule. And, you know, when I explained to him the rationale for the OHL, where we really feel that the icing rule, where you cannot make a line change, could adversely impact on young players playing, you know, on a regular basis in the third period, he kind of understood that. And he said, okay. Didn't know why. That makes some sense.
You're curious about, let's get back to the OHL for a couple of seconds. And I think a lot of observers and people that were fans of the Belleville Bulls were surprised at the news that the team had been sold and will be moved to Hamilton. How long had this been an issue in your office, what was happening in Belleville?
Well, I think the single factor in terms of the Belleville concern was around the arena facility. And that had been expressed consistently, not only by the current owner for the past 11 years, Gord Simmons, but the previous owner, Dr. Bob Vaughn. And so we knew that was an issue. I think what the Belleville owner and the league certainly acknowledged and agreed that we would not ever say, hey, if you don't do this, then we're going to leave town. I mean, we don't think is the right way to do business and to try and leverage and the like. But it was clear to the city that under the current arrangements with the Yardmen, I mean, the franchises could not remain economically viable. So in any event, I mean, that was the reason. And it happened quickly, largely because the AHL situation changed rather quickly as it related to the Hamilton Bulldogs and their relocation. So when that opportunity presented itself, Belleville ownership felt that it was time to make a move.
What does Michael Andlauer bring to the table? I mean, he's been a guy who's been around the American Hockey League, part owner of the Montreal Canadiens, but you must be excited about adding his name to your ownership group in the Ontario Hockey League. And how do you see things moving forward in Hamilton? I mean, it's a market that's had an opportunity in the past.
Yeah, I mean, all great questions and comments about Mike Andlauer, and I think he is going to be a positive addition to our league. I mean, I've known Michael now for the last 4 or 5 years, actually. I can remember, you know, his son played for Halton, AAA, and coached against his son for a few years, and that's when I first started to get to know him. He was on the executive of the American Hockey League and the president of the AHL, Dave Andrews, speaks real high of Mike and his understanding of league and the importance of league first. So I think that really fits well, and he's done a great amount of work in the Hamilton market to build relationships and, you know, understands the importance of putting back. And we know there's going to be challenges with the arena facility. As I have said to people, if I had two arenas to pick one from, one that was too small and one that was too big, I'd take the one that's too big. And we recognize that the First Ontario Place for our needs is too big, but we'll find a way. Michael will find a way. So, I mean, I think that part is all to our benefit, and I just believe the OHL brand is so much stronger since the last time we were in the Hamilton marketplace, and I think together with Mike's leadership and what the OHL now brings, it should work really, really well.
Give us a snapshot, if you could, as we head into the playoffs in the Western League, the Ontario League, and, of course, the QMJHL. What's the most pressing issue for Dave Branch in your office right now?
Getting out of the way, trying to stay out of the way, you know? I mean, we're in a real special time of the year, as we all know. And, I mean, the playoff races are starting to really take shape. Saginaw captured the final playoff position in the Western Conference when I was at their game on Sunday. So that's in order. We've got a race going on in the East, of course, here in Ontario. Out West, I mean, they're largely locked in out West, and there's still a few struggles the playoff positions in the queue. But, I mean, the key now is to allow the games to be played out and played through, and you just hope that you're not brought into it with any particular reason of on-ice issues or concerns, and you know, allow the teams to settle it, you know, based on all the right values and what you hope the game presents to our fans and players and everyone interested. So it's a time now where you just watch, observe, and really react to any particular needs leading into the MasterCard Memorial Cup in Quebec City at the end of May.
David, this will be my last question, but getting towards the MasterCard Memorial Cup, I mean, I've obviously taken a huge liking to that event. It's the favorite thing that I do all year. But there's been a groundswell of late about changing the format of it in terms of the host and that sort of thing. Is this something that's stagnant in your eyes, or is it something that allows for ongoing discussion as to possible changes in the future?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, as we all know in life, you don't make a change for the sake of a change. But then you also want to keep challenging yourself as to, you know, how you might can do some things, not only differently, but obviously better. And the Memorial Cup format is one that certainly we've been looking at and considering. And we are also looking at it from the standpoint that with the 2018 MasterCard Memorial Cup, we will be celebrating the 100th anniversary of the trophy being presented. So we see that maybe as a timely occasion to possibly make some changes to the event and how we currently conduct the playoffs and process for awarding the Memorial Cup. So we'll just wait and see on that one.
Well, we look forward to the playoffs and, of course, getting to Quebec City at the end of May for the MasterCard Memorial Cup. Dave, thanks for taking time today and stepping away from the OHL Cup to talk to us today.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you very much, Sam.
Well, Sam, did the commissioner/president come close to making a little bit of news in your estimation there? The format?
I would say so. It's definitely worth following. I mean, I don't know, Jeff. I'm a fan of the format right now. I really am. And I understand from, you know, from an organizing perspective that you need really a year to kind of organize such a huge event of that magnitude. But I'm not sure how you get around being able to tell a city that they're going to host without their team necessarily being in it. So I'm fascinated to hear that... you know, the changes that are being bantied about and you know, of course, Mr. Branch there, you know, hinting to us that the change may come as quickly as 2018. So that's really fascinating for me, I got to tell you, because, you know, this will be my 10th and the format's been the same for all 10 of my years. And I like the host. I really do. And I know it's sucked on a couple of occasions with, you know, Saskatoon and Shawinigan or whatnot, but by the same token, you know, Shawinigan in particular, it makes for an unbelievable storyline that they're able to do what they did in having, you know, 35 days off and coming back to win the whole thing in the longest mm-hmm. road, most arduous road possible in the history of the event. So I don't know. I like it the way it is, but I'm interested to hear what you'd have to say about what you might see in the future for changes or if you even like the format.
I do like the format conceptually. Like, I always like the idea, and I like getting there. I like the tournament itself to have a very distinct flavor. Like last year when we were in London, you know, everything is sort of has a sort of green London-esque tint to it. That there's a flavor to the tournament. Quebec is going to be off the charts. I mean, that's going to be fantastic this year. Quebec City with all the stories going into that one, regardless of what the Ramparts do. But you know, the end of the Colisée and all those great stories from that building and the players from before and those teams and everything around the event will be fantastic. I do like the event in theory, in principle. I like what they're getting at, and I'm with you. It does take time to do these things properly, and it would be a challenge to put something on like this for a couple of weeks if, you know, you only have a couple of weeks to prepare for them. Having said that, somewhere in the back of my mind, I still prefer, and this just might be the old school hockey guy in me, I still prefer getting down to two teams and doing a best of seven. I understand the value of the one and done and getting it done quickly, but somewhere in the I don't know how they would do it. I know there might be, you know, grief from one of the leagues if it's, you know, a Q team and an O team and there's no team from the West that's represented. But just the idea of doing something, maybe you start at 16 and whittle your way down to two. I still like the idea of getting down to two teams and not just doing a one and done, but doing a best of seven. Because ultimately, here's my question. Last year, the Edmonton Oil Kings won the MasterCard Memorial Cup, beat the heavily favored Guelph Storm in the biggest game of all those kids' careers. Now, I do wonder, if that was a best of seven series, does Edmonton still win the MasterCard Memorial Cup, or do we have a different champion? I mean, they do it in the leagues and then change formats for the actual MasterCard Memorial Cup event itself. I can see the value in both, and I wrestle back and forth, but I keep coming back to whatever you can do, get it down to two teams, and then give me the war of attrition. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know what? And I suppose from a pure hockey perspective, you know, having a seven-game series to decide essentially a national champion is a pretty cool idea. You know, there's a lot of logistics that have to work around that. I'd say to the flip side, though, you know, having Edmonton win last year is truly unique to what is a truly unique event. And so it keeps that uniqueness, if you will. But I kind of like that idea, though. It's just a matter of how are you going to get down to a Final Four, and you have to be inclusive of all three league champions. You have to be. So who's the fourth team? Is it the fourth team in the BMO rankings? Is it the next best place team in the rankings? You know, let's say if you have 3, 4, and 5 that are in league champions and somehow 1 and 2 got beat out, do you go to the seventh team? Do the 1 and 2 teams get a chance to come back and be the top team again? That figuring out the logistics of that is well above my pay grade, I'll tell you.
For much taller foreheads than me, people with much bigger brains can figure that one out. But I'll tell you what, this might be an interesting way to do it as well. If you can get it down to two teams, Sam, considering Sportsnet, you know, controls the NHL rights as well, could we see a scenario, or should we see a scenario, whereby you have NHL Stanley Cup Final Game 1 the following day, which is an off day for the NHL, you have CHL MasterCard Memorial Cup Final Game 1, and then you go NHL game, CHL game, NHL game, CHL game. So then you put that CHL product right up next to the Stanley Cup Final.
Which would be really cool. I mean, you know, logistically, you're going to have issues too, because do they want the MasterCard Memorial Cup being played that late in the year?
Great question.
That's the challenge I think you're going to face. But if you're able to pare back the NHL playoffs, and you're not going to do it, of course, because of the CHL, but maybe that's something they work in conjunction with, or they, you know, the teams get down to two teams, you have a week off, and then you start up for a seven-game series. So I do kind of like that idea, though, of having a seven-game series. I think from a broadcasting perspective, it would be really fun to be able to do that. I know doing games in the current format, you know, presents a challenge. You're preparing for four teams. The storylines continue to build, so that's kind of a cool way to do it. But a seven-game series, I don't know. That'd be really interesting, because I've never had the opportunity to broadcast in a situation like that. For me, it's getting to those two teams. How do you go about doing that in a way where you still have a festival of hockey, in a way where you 100%. Still kind of have that feel of hosting and all that? That's the challenge, you know, I think the Canadian Hockey League is going to face. But I'm very interested to hear what plans they might have to get to that end.
Yep, those are great points. And what it would do is, if you end up doing that best of seven, it would make the hardest trophy in all of hockey to win that much harder. Like, those kids need another hurdle they need to jump over. We'll come back in a moment, wrap up another edition of Junior in a couple of seconds.
I'm Scott Hartnell from the Columbus Blue Jackets, a former Prince Albert Raider at the WHL.
All right, Sam, finishing up today's podcast, we'll have a little preview of the two games we have in store for you Friday on Friday Night Hockey, and then CHL on Sportsnet Sunday afternoon. Sunday, it'll be Erie and Niagara. Get to that in a couple of moments, but you will be earning your travel points large. You'll be taking in the Kelowna-Vancouver game and then hustling to Niagara for the Ice Dogs and the Erie Otters. First up, your thoughts on what to expect Friday night, specifically from the Kelowna Rockets, who I think it's safe to say haven't put their best foot forward yet when they've been broadcast on national television this year.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. And what you have to wonder, Jeff, just going into this game, is exactly where the playoff seedings are going to be once we get there. I mean, we know that the WHL goes dark on Thursday nights, but there are a couple of games, the Kamloops at Prince George in particular, that may have an impact on how things go and may very well determine the end of the year for the Vancouver Giants at that point. So maybe you're looking at affiliated players, and then, you know, reading a piece today by Stevie Ewan in the Vancouver Province talking about Bruce Hamilton you know, being in contact with Scott Bonner about what kind of lineup they want to throw out there. Because if you'll remember a couple of years ago, Colton Sissons in the second last game of the year was Kelowna's captain, ended up getting hurt, missed the playoffs. They don't want that scenario to rear its ugly head again, knowing that they've cemented that top spot in the Western Conference as the top seed there. So the lineups are going to be fascinating for me, and maybe it's a glimpse of the future. Maybe it's, you know, status quo because Vancouver still has something to play for at that point. But that's going to be the fascinating part to me, just looking at the lineups in general. When you break down these two teams, obviously there's a, you know, huge dichotomy in Vancouver area that they've really struggled in is just scoring goals. I mean, I think they've been shut out 14 times this year. Boy, oh boy. 184 goals for, second worst to Tri-City in all of the WHL. So that's obviously been a problem there.
And meanwhile, the Kelowna goal scoring has not been a problem. It is, in some regards, a traveling all-star team, if you will, with the Kelowna Rockets, led by Leon Draisaitl, but he's not the only one. Madison Bowie, of course, from the point, and Rourke Scharche and Nick Merkley go right down the line. Tyson Bailey. This is a team that can sting you in so many different ways. And we've seen them a handful of times as well. So far, you know, in advance of Friday's game, what's been your main takeaway from what we've seen from the Kelowna Rockets this season?
You're right. Have not performed particularly well on TV, but I think that their best has yet to come, period. End of story. Part of that has to do with health. Part of that has to do with chemistry. You know, right now, Danny Lambert's, he's dealing with rest, rust, getting ready for the playoffs, keeping the edge, but not getting guys hurt. There's a lot of challenges, I think, when you're that far ahead. About what to do with your hockey club to get them ready so that when the puck drops for the first day of the playoffs, that your team is peaking or at its best. So those are the challenges that the Kelowna Rockets face right now. But, you know, on paper, you mentioned it, traveling all-star team. Once things get going, you know, I really like the fact that they play a flow game. They've got a nice mix of older and younger guys. So there is a lot to like about Kelowna. I still think that the weak area is goaltending. And Jackson Whistle, you can argue with the numbers he's had this year. To me, though, at least in my live viewings, he's shown some susceptibility. The positive part of that is Michael Herringer has played well enough, I think, to earn the backup spot in the playoffs. And he's played well that should he have to go in there, should be able to perform with the team he has in front of him. So if there's one chink in the armor for the Kelowna Rockets, I would have to say that it would be goaltending. And, you know, that's not a disservice to Jackson Whistle as much as how strong the other parts of their team is.
Sunday afternoon, it is the CHL on Sportsnet, and looking forward once again to seeing Connor McDavid and the Erie Otters face off against a team that, well, just to be blunt, Sam, no one really wants to face in the playoffs, and can you blame them? Winners of two in a row on an 8-2 run in their last 10, facing off against the Otters. That is, of course, the Ice Dogs. The Otters on a nice little 7-game winning streak. They're 9-1 in their last 10 games, so peaking strongly heading into the playoffs. What do you expect? Erie versus Niagara. Let's not forget, too, if there's one team out there that's given Connor McDavid and the Erie Otters fits all season long, it's the Niagara Ice Dogs.
Yeah, they've held them scoreless twice, and that is an next to impossible task. So that's going to be a storyline going into that game as well. But for Erie, they're cemented in that two-hole, so they really don't have anywhere to go. However, Niagara, you know, you look at the dichotomy between their home and their road record, 22-7-2-0 at home. They still have an opportunity to win home ice against Ottawa. It looks as if that's going to be the matchup, a 4-5 matchup between Ottawa and Niagara. But what a difference it would be for those two clubs that both played exceptionally well on home ice and both are just 13 wins, regulation wins right now. For each of those clubs on the road. So that's going to be a huge determinant, I think, moving down the stretch. You would expect Niagara to put its best foot forward in order to try and gain that. And who knows what kind of lineup Erie's going to throw out there based on the fact that they're cemented in the two spot.
In the two spot. Now, they'll face off most likely against the Sarnia Sting in the opening round of the playoffs for the OHL's Western Conference. And as you mentioned, it looks like Niagara and Ottawa, the 4-5 there, the only question, I suppose, would be the home ice advantage and who does gain it. For Erie, the knock, you mentioned goaltending with the Kelowna Rockets. Can we say the same thing about the Erie Otters, that the one area, and maybe they could have added one more defenseman at trade deadline, but the one area that is of prime importance and is also of a prime concern for the Erie Otters, that's net mining, and can Devin Williams really carry this load?
He needs to regain the game that helped him overtake Oscar Dansk as the number one guy last year. I don't know if he's quite there yet. The one thing about playing goal for Erie is that you're not, you know, your action is going to be intermittent because your team has the puck a lot, but yeah, you're also going to give up some chances because you don't have the most mobile defense group back there. And so you're going to see some chances against every now and then. And that's the thing. When you combine those two things, that's a dangerous proposition for a goalie who's not getting consistent action. And when he gets action, he's probably getting odd man rushes against him. And so Williams is going to really have to sharpen up his game, and he's going to have to be peaking at a time when everyone is looking around and saying, well, why? Why didn't Sherry Bassin go out and get Jake Pettersson? And, yeah, you know, there are two quick answers to that. One is because their overage spots were filled. The other is because they feel confident enough in Devin Williams with his performance last year that he's going to be able to rise to the occasion.
Yeah, you mentioned Jake Pettersson a second ago, and of course the Kitchener Rangers got him, and he's done miraculous work helping get the Kitchener Rangers into the playoffs and solidifying their spot. They'll face off against London, it appears, although they do have a shot at getting to that five spot occupied right now by Owen Sound, but we'll see what happens. We just saw the Rangers, of course, on Friday Night Hockey, a really impressive first period. The second period was Jake Pettersson standing on his head. What do you make? Because we talk about the Ice Dogs being, you know, that first-round team that no one wants to face off against. If you're a team, like, let's say they face the London Knights, and they've done really well against London all season long, are you a little bit nervous about facing Jake Pettersson and the Kitchener Rangers in the opening round?
Sure am. Terrifies me. Terrifies me. Because I think he can steal a series on his own. I really, really do. And, you know, if they get London, who they've played well against all season, they're already a leg up there. But now as you move into round number two, that's probably where things are going to start to really pick up and the intensity pick up. And that's where Pettersson's value is really going to come to life there. So just for the fact of being in the Western Conference, knowing that he's a guy that I might see down the road, yes, it would terrify me, and especially in round number one when I know Pettersson is on the lower-seeded team.
And there you have it. There's another edition of the podcast. Thanks for listening to Junior. By the way, top 10 CHL rankings you can find at our Twitter feed at SNetJunior. So be sure to check that out and see what the top 10 looks like for this week. On behalf of Sam and our producer, Matt Brown, thanks so much for tuning in. Enjoy the games this weekend. We have Kelowna, Vancouver Friday. We have Erie and Niagara on Sunday afternoon. And then we're headlong right into the CHL playoffs. Thanks so much for joining us today. Thanks for listening either at sportsnet.ca or downloading us on iTunes. We'll be back next week.